Journalist Gary Kubota has covered news in the islands for 40 decades. Now he's come out with a book called Stories of Change, thanks to Kukua Hawaii Oral History Project and a grant from the Hawaii Council of Humanities and the Hawaii People's Fund. Now, Kubota credits the idea for the book to Lawrence Kamakaveva-Olde. He was a leader of the group fighting to save pig farmers from being evicted from Kalama Valley out in East Honolulu. Now, as a teen, Kubota was actually arrested when he took part in one of those protests. He reflected on how that experience and how Kamakaveva-Olde's idea came together.
He was one of the leaders opposing the eviction of Kalama Valley residents, and the organization was Kukua Kalama initially, but then it was called Kukua Hawaii. And so he'd seen my play called Legend of Ko'olau at the Hawaii Theater, and he loved the play. It was about a Native Hawaiian hero, Kalawai Ko'olau, who resisted leprosy, forced the movement of lepers to Kalapapa, and basically fought off the militias that had overthrown the monarchy. And he liked to play, and so he and Pete Thompson, who was on his deathbed, I guess, at the time, they were talking about who should do a book or something like that, and they decided that they'd approach me.
Oh, interesting.
And that's how it happened.
Okay, yeah. But now you also had a sidebar story going because you took part in...
Yeah,
I
wasn't initially at Kukua. I just went to support them. And to get arrested, I was like many people from that era. I was like a peace activist and opposed to the Vietnam War, and protesting against the eviction of farmers and Native Hawaiians just seemed a really good thing to do, because why not? I mean, we were already protesting the bombing of Asians who I'd never met. You know, and so it was just a kind of a natural step in terms of activism to take that position. You know, and then there were so many contradictions at the time. The Vietnam War was going on. You'd see, like, the names of Hawaiians and Filipinos and sometimes Japanese who died in Vietnam as soldiers. And then you go to the University of Hawaii, and I tell you, you know, you could look at 300 students walking around. Maybe you were lucky if you saw three or four Filipinos or Hawaiians. So there was kind of like this whole practice of channeling certain minorities to become soldiers. And, you know, it was an act essentially of what I refer to as institutionalized racism. This country has had, you know, the privileged classes don't have to go to war and others do. You know, I was a bit upset about that whole kind of setup. In addition to the fact that there wasn't much mention about the contributions of minorities from Hawaii in American history books. So, you know, I supported the beginnings and the establishment of the ethnic studies program at the University of Hawaii.
So then after your little stint as an activist and you know, who got arrested as part of this, then you became a journalist.
Then I became a journalist because I realized that it was an important role that I could play in terms of not so much slanting stories, but just deciding that, you know, I would actively pursue some stories that others may not have an interest in because they don't have the background. Like when farmers in Kia and I would complain that their taro fields were drying up because the water had been diverted by sugarcane companies, I would check into it and I'd write a story. And then I'd call the sugarcane companies. Of course, they deny it. But then, miraculously, two or three days later, the water would start running into the taro fields again. And so they call me on a regular basis. And then Walter Reddy, like that, complained about illegal sand mining and how nobody was doing anything about it. And I paid attention. I found out, I kind of like waited for the trucks to drive by, and then I followed them on the next day and recorded where they went to Moomomi and recorded where they went to Pacific Concrete. And then I checked with the county, and 6 months later the county said, yeah, no, they don't have permits. And so they stopped Pacific Concrete from taking banned from the area. Then I wrote my story.
Right. I mean, but you really, well, you're a watchdog is what you are. And so tell us about how then this whole book got going.
Basically, I saw friends of mine who were activists sick or dying. And, you know, I wanted to interview them just to get it on tape. And so, you know, I selected, it was like triage interviewing in the beginning. Like I interviewed Kalani Ohello, who already had lost a leg due to diabetes. I interviewed Moani Keala Kaka, who was a former OHA trustee, arrested also in Columba Valley, with me and Kalani. And she, 3 months later, she contracted cancer. And both of them have died since the interview. And so it was an attempt to try and get a hold of these kinds of activists first. But and then it began to expand. Rather than just Kukua Hawaii members, I interviewed presidents of various community associations, or else their children and wives who remembered Kukua Hawaii working in the communities. Because I worked in Oda Camp as a volunteer. I was invited, along with two other Kukua Hawaii members, to live in Oda Camp. And we stayed there for several months when there were no offers and when public opinion was still against, against or neutral as far as, like, them being evicted. And in those ensuing months, we were able to kind of help to turn the tide a bit in terms of public opinion. We created posters. We helped them have media days. We did research for them. You know, all of this is, when it came to the community side, we played a background role a lot of times because we're trying to develop community leaders and to support them in their decisions. We weren't trying to choreograph anything, but we wanted to make sure that the principles of what we called self-determination were realized as much as possible. So in the case of Oda Camp, Pete Tagalog was the one that spoke at the hearings and meetings, and we talked with Pete during steering committee meetings, on ideas and things like that. And what happened was, as a result of that, after Columba Valley on May 11, 1971, you had these several other communities facing evictions: Waiholi, Waikani, Alava Housing, Census Tract 57 in Hikina and Akepo Lanes in Kalihi, Heiakea, Chinatown, something on Kauai, I think it was Nukuʻalii, and they all called Kukua Hawaii and asked for help. And so we developed into a cadre organization and a community organizer organization. And we coordinated certain events, such as rallies, and also, like, in terms of ethnic studies, gathering presidents of various community associations and associations that supported us to occupy the building, at the administration building at the University of Hawaii Manoa.
That's right, I remember
to continue
that.
Continue ethnic studies. Yeah.
It's just so interesting because you were able to record these interviews with so many people. I know when I saw the cover of your book, I was like, oh, I know her. I know him. You know, and it just, with all our time, you know, covering all these news stories over the decades. And it's funny because I think the last time I went back to Hawaii Kai, I was on my bike and I think I almost got chased out by a feral pig and her piglets. But I was just kind of musing over, you know, how that valley has changed.
Yeah, it's changed considerably. I mean, obviously, it's like, you know, it's for upper middle class people, if not, more upper class. The thing about it was basically that it was the beginning of opposing land evictions that affected a whole slew of people, but mainly affected at that time Native Hawaiians and farmers. And these are the ones that are getting pushed from one valley to the next. George Santos had been pushed out of various valleys multiple times. He was the pig farmer and also one of the spokesmen for Kukua Hawaii. We're a multi-ethnic organization. in Waihole Waikani, of course, there was one guy who had actually, a farmer, who had actually been evicted from Kalama Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm not leaving anymore. I'm going to put my money. So he gave Waihole Waikani a large contribution to fight the eviction.
Yeah, whether it's pig farmers or taro farmers.
Can you imagine having Hawaiian culture without taro? Or being an environmentalist and allowing the development of hotels at Sandy Beach? These are things that, you know, right now would be unthinkable. But back then, those are the kinds of things that were proposed.
Right, and the residents there then took a stand.
And there are individuals who weren't residents, not only in Kukua, Hawaii, Bob Nakata. He was a volunteer community organizer. He was working for Key Campaign, later became a state senator, and he's continued to be a voice for housing for the poor and for working people. You know, recently they recognized Bob for his work at the state legislature in developing a bill, $200 million bill, to assist in development of that kind of housing. And George Cooper was an associate of ours. He became, of course, the author, co-author of Land Empowering Hawaii.
That's right, with Gavin Dawes.
George actually stayed at my place for about a week while he was researching for the book, you know, when I lived on Maui. I still live on Maui.
Well, this must be very gratifying for you then.
I'm really happy the way it turned out, but you know, when you begin, you're always beginning with this kind of a sense of, well, you know, I'm going to just try my best. Initially, you know, when I started, there was no money or grants involved. I just wanted to do it because I thought it was the right thing. And I started about 3 years ago, you know, doing the interviews. And the initial grant actually called for me, probably they were expecting 15 to 20 interviews.
Mm.
And it ended up being more than 30 interviews. And I was just thinking of a spiral binding folder because I couldn't afford to do much else, you know. I mean,
right.
And then suddenly UH Press and Gavin saw a copy of the book and he liked what he saw. So he, you know, called UH Press and asked them to help me at least in terms of the printing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, UH Press is not the publisher, but it did help in connecting us with their printer, and we got a significant discount on the printing of the book, which enabled us to of course, have this book signing and everything.
Kubota, who's retired from the newspaper business, says, reflecting on his career, he's proud that some of his recent stories have led to community building and change in state law. One relates to the move to keep units on Front Street affordable, and a second bill closed a loophole in our system that now requires families of someone suffering from mental illness who's in the judiciary system to be notified of proceedings. Two book signings will take place on Oahu this weekend at Windward Community College midday Saturday and at Nemea Bookstore at Ward Center on Sunday afternoon. Kubota says the book will go into a second printing, and he expects other signings will take place on the neighbor islands as well. For links, go to our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.